listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this broadcast, we invite you to participate in our chat on the emotionalpro.com page or on the blogtalkradio.com/FPL page. Were you ever called overly emotional as a kid? Well, I was. If you had intense emotions, or if your child has intense emotions now, today's show promises to be a big relief and help to you. Even if you share office space, a home, or a neighborhood with someone with intense emotions, we want you to listen up. Today's guest is going to be telling us what she has learned that can help turn a kid with intense emotions into one that can improve their social relationships, their decision-making skills, their self-control, and their ability to take action and achieve their goals by working with their intense emotions and strong feelings. Mary C. Lamia, Ph.D., is our guest today. You can find her at marylamia.com. Dr. Lamia is a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst in Marin County, California, who works with adults, adolescents, and preteens, and she's a professor at the prestigious Wright Institute in Berkeley, California. For nearly a decade, she also hosted a weekly call-in talk show, Kid Talk with Dr. Mary, on Radio Disney stations, and her opinion has been sought in hundreds of television, radio, and print media interviews and discussions. So, Dr. Mary Lamia, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you for having me on, Eileen.
Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
You are.
Oh, good. I want to make sure we do that. I hate it when people don't pronounce my name right. So I want you to tell us about your lovely book, and I want to say that it is a lovely book. It's so very colorful. I want to know what your intention and motivation were in putting it out.
It seems like a lot of people, adults and children and adolescents, don't understand what emotions are, why they are triggered, why we have them. We treat them as though they're something foreign and something they should be dealt with or gotten rid of, rather than for what they're meant to do. And I wrote this book for kids because I wanted them to understand at an early age what their emotions are all about, how to use them wisely, how to deal with them when they're intense and they produce those strong feelings that feel so overwhelming. And instead of, say, screaming into your hands when you're stressed, to understand exactly what you can do.
Yeah, that's very, very important. And you're aiming primarily at preteens and young teens?
Yes, this book is for preteens, but a lot of parents are buying it for themselves.
I was going to ask that question.
Yes, it's true. They are. They seem to have a lot of fun with it. But also, the adult version of the book is actually on my Psychology Today blog on psychologytoday.com. I have the whole array of emotions that I blog about, more geared toward adults and parents.
And how can people access that? Go to psychologytoday.com and
psychologytoday.com and go across the top to the experts. And if you look under Lamia, you'll get my blog on intense emotions and strong feelings.
Okay, that's Lamia.
Right.
Well, studies have shown, you note in some of your writing, that emotional learning, that is being able to recognize, understand, and manage emotions, is linked to academic success. So I imagine part of your impetus also is in helping children and the families that are involved with the children to reach academic success, to achieve it anyway.
Academic success, self-awareness, success in social relations, decision-making skills, self-control, ability to take action, achieve goals. Emotions can help you with all of that. They're very powerful. And if you understand them and understand why they're triggered and what happens when they're triggered, you'll be able to use them for that purpose or for those purposes, because they really do help us with that self-awareness. You know, people don't understand that emotions are actually an attention-directing system. They're kind of a vague signal, sort of like if you were in a foreign country and you wanted to know which way to go to get to a certain restaurant, and you name the restaurant, and the foreign-speaking person, when you named the restaurant, knew where you wanted to go but couldn't explain it in your language, so they point. And that's what emotions are. They're sort of a vague signal that tell you which way to go or attention directing, but how you interpret them is really up to you. So you may go the wrong way because you misinterpret them, or other things may interfere with your interpretation of the emotion. But emotions will direct you if you know how to listen to them.
I totally agree with you. A lot of my work as a psychotherapist is directed toward emotions, and that is precisely what we have talked about many times on this show, that emotions operate as signals and very much offer you direction and help you with decision-making. So I'm really grateful that you're putting that out to children and to the world.
Well, I'm grateful that you have a program where you're talking about emotions and people can understand them, because it's so important. Most of the time when, and you must talk a lot about this, is, you know, when people have the physiological changes that come with an emotion, and these physiological changes prepare you to take action, but they're misinterpreted. You know, if you feel anxiety and you feel that discomfort in your body, you want to do something to get rid of it rather than look at it and say, what is this telling me and how could it help me focus? Because anxiety does just that.
So why do we largely misinterpret? Is it ignorance of what emotions are about, or is it lack of connection with, you know, not having learned to make connection with ourselves? What's the reason we misinterpret?
I think emotions are misinterpreted just simply because we don't understand them. Mm-hmm. And that's why children need to learn early what that's all about. For example, the emotion of disgust is one that parents and children don't understand, where it is just instinctual and self-protective to experience a disgust response, because evolution gave us that emotion to respond to something that's spoiled or contaminated. And it's also triggered by things that are unfamiliar or things that smell bad or things that have a strange texture. So when children are given an unfamiliar food that has a strange texture, they might automatically, some don't, but many do, experience a disgust response, and they don't want to eat it, and so a parent might get annoyed or upset or push the child in some way, not helping the child understand that you're having that response just because it seems strange, and that's all it is.
And legitimizing that when something is strange for you, that's something to pay attention to. I think that's also important, and what you emphasize in...
And speaking of a disgust response, you know, the disgust response that's most often misinterpreted by parents is when, say, parents are divorced and they begin to date, and the child sees the parent, one parent, with a new partner. That will actually trigger a disgust response in a child. It triggers moral disgust in a child because it just doesn't seem right. And parents often say, well, it's because I'm with somebody else and I'm not with your father or your mother, or you don't want my attention taken away from you. It's none of those things. It automatically triggers a moral disgust response because it just doesn't feel right. And that's an evolutionary mechanism.
That's really interesting. I never thought of it that way.
But poor kids, you know, they're just having this response and they feel as though they're bad, or they get angry or upset. But if a parent just took them aside and said, you know, it just doesn't feel right, does it? And I understand that. That's just something that's kind of automatic when I'm not with your other parent.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that would
somehow it places it in a context that a child can understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about the title of your book, you say, Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings. And I'm kind of curious about whether there's a difference or you're casting a wide net by including...
Oh, what a great question. And so that question sort of points to, you know, what is the difference between an emotion and a feeling? And I'm so glad you asked, because most people don't understand even that. And it's not something we learn. Emotions are in our brain. They're triggered in our brain by something, usually outside. And feelings are felt in our body. So when emotions are triggered, we have a response in our body because our parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems are activated. And then we have thoughts in our mind. So strong feelings are really secondary to an emotion being triggered. Feelings come from an emotion, but they are not an emotion. They are our feelings in our body. So there's a bodily reaction, and then there's thoughts that are triggered in our mind based on what happens when an emotion is occurring in our brain,
mm-hmm.
is triggered in our brain. So, you know, that's where people have to understand that there's this system they have in their body. So like when your emotion triggers the anger, let's say you have anger in your brain, you know, that gets triggered, that emotion, then you think negatively and you feel irritable and you're on guard and prepared to lash out, because emotions are made for us to take action and to do something to protect ourselves. Or in the case of sadness, you know, you have a heavy feeling in your chest and you think unhappy thoughts and you're inclined to rest when you're sad. We don't really know the purpose of sadness as an emotion, but we assume that it's because we have to rest, or resting helps us. Or anxiety creates uneasiness and makes us alert to the possibility that something bad might happen. So emotions are in your brain, feelings are in your body. That's the difference.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, I'm interested, too, that clearly you've worked with children in therapy and you also did your Disney talk show for a decade. Would you tell the people who are listening about the kinds of involvements that you've had with kids and their emotions and how that has kind of drawn your attention to writing the book?
Well, it's both kids and their emotions and adults and their emotions. I decided to start with kids. All of the quotes that are in the book, Understanding Myself, are actually from kids who called in to the Radio Disney talk show I did for 9 years. And I have, I don't know, I probably have a million quotes over 9 years, but I just sort of extracted some that went with the various chapters because I wanted something real in there. You can't make these things up. It would be impossible for me. But it was wonderful, you know, to have them, you know, a real life quotes.
Right. I have a couple of them I'm looking at. Embarrassment is such a big thing at my school. There's so many things that can happen in school to make you feel embarrassed.
I love that one.
And when I'm around boys that I like, I get nervous and blush. I wonder what they're going to do or if they like me or not. Haley says that. Those are cute. They're just delightful.
And you know, kids talk about their emotions all the time, but they don't really know what to do about them. For example, like blushing. Children often don't understand that blushing is a complete natural response to have, and there's nothing you can do about it. And how blushing happens is important to know. And so I describe that in the book. and why your face turns red and what you can do about it to make that response sort of calm down. Mm-hmm. And what to do when you're embarrassed, and just the whole idea that the sense that everybody is looking at you comes from inside of you. It's not really what's happening on the outside. So how to interpret emotion and not assume that everybody outside knows what's going on inside of you. Mm-hmm. And that's important for kids in middle school.
Right. I know, too, that very often one of the suggestions you make is to distract yourself in a lot of cases. And the way I interpreted that was really to focus your attention on something more positive. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, that's one way to look at it, and that's a nice positive way to look at it. But distraction in general helps people get away from the response in their body and in their thoughts of an emotion. So, for example, as an adult, if you're feeling angry, let's say, about something, and you're preoccupied with it, sometimes it's really hard to come to some conclusion about what to do with that emotional response when you're feeling it and when it's so dominant. So if you do something else to distract yourself, be with a friend, clean a closet, do something maybe that's productive or positive, as you say, it allows you to calm down long enough to maybe assess your reaction, because that's really important with emotion. Emotions give us a response, but we always have to assess whether or not that response is accurate or a misfire. And maybe that's what you're pointing to, is the misfires that occur with emotion, where an emotion can get triggered and yet, you know, is it really appropriate for this situation? So it's always up to us to sort of take a look at it and decide if it's right. But if you're too involved with it, it's good to distract yourself to get away from it for a little while.
Hard to see past it when you're too involved.
Oh, yes. Yes, because emotions can be so consuming. For example, envy, jealousy, anger, some of those intense emotions can be consuming.
You're reminding me, yesterday I was digging in my garden, and I have a lovely little 9-year-old, and she has very loving parents, a little girl who came by with her helmet and scooter, and she was going to go down the hill, and I asked her how she was, and she said she was fine, except, she says, my mother is upset with me because I walked away when she was lecturing me, and now she won't let me back in the house to finish my schoolwork. And I started to laugh, and I said, oh, my gosh, when you grow up, one of the things you're going to remember is how creative your mother has been in selecting consequences. And it pulled her, as she puzzled about what I was saying, it pulled her right out of it, and she began to giggle.
Good, and that allows her to kind of get past it, and then everything will calm down.
Right. Right. When I discovered later that the family was going off someplace to do something in the evening, and she needed to get her work done, so it was a perfect thing. Her mother was irritated with her.
Imagine your punishment being that you can't do your homework.
Yes. So I wanted to know how you envision youngsters interacting with understanding myself. Had you thought of them as working on their own in groups with their parents in counseling groups, or all of the above?
Well, all of the above, really. You know, a parent can read it, and then when a child is expressing an emotion, try to help the child understand it, because they have the tools now, too, to do that. That example I gave in the beginning of a child screaming into his hands, that's an actual example where a parent told me that her child was screaming into his hands, and she said, well, why are you screaming into your hands? And he says, I'm just venting my stress. And and where if the child or parent had read the book, they would know that venting your stress only stirs up your emotional brain. It doesn't calm it down. And that there are various things you can do with your stress that will help you soothe yourself and calm down. But venting doesn't work. Another example of that are, you know, parents who tell their child who's angry, go and hit a pillow. Well, that doesn't work either. I mean, that's venting. And it doesn't work to get something out. And I think somehow in our society, we've come to think that venting is a good thing. And people do it in everyday ways, too. Like, you know, you read the newspaper. I have a lot of patients who come in after reading the newspaper in the morning, and they'll start venting about things they read in the news or things they've heard on the radio on the way over to my office, and they're just venting. And almost like they have to let it out because they can't deal with the emotions that it stirs up in them. And, of course, news is made to stir up emotions in you, so, I mean, that's a problem. But there's another way to deal with it if you understand what emotion it evokes.
I want to talk with you a little bit about that after our break, which we are up to right now. We're talking with Dr. Mary C. Lamia, who's a psychologist, author, and professor, and author of Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings. So let's talk about what does work to get your feelings out or handled. You're listening to Full Power Living. Stay with us. We'll be right back.